You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphs and successes of business across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you remotely, but through the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by the Bank of Sun Prairie. Having a rough time here. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we are welcoming / preparing to learn from Araceli Esparza, Midwest Mujer, an outreach marketing company. Araceli, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. Thank you, James.
I am so glad that you're on the show. I'm trying to think now. I have known you, a couple years, something like that. But you've been kind of mover and shaker in Madison for quite a while, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, I was born and raised here. I've been doing a lot of work around community activism, since high school.
All right.
Since high school, yeah. Well, Mr. McPike was my principal, so it kind of goes with the territory.
Sure. So why don't you tell us, just for the listeners to get started, what is Wisconsin Mujer?
So Wisconsin Mujer is a social engagement company. We assist nonprofit agencies that are led primarily by women of color and marginalized communities. So we're very selective on who our clients are. And that being said, because of the work we do, both digitally and facilitation and speaker-led events, mainly fundraisers and other engagements where we want community input, say. My company goes for those type of bids. We are a minority-owned business registered with the state of Wisconsin, so we go after state bids as well. The focus is always like targeting marginalized communities, you know, be it a new program, maybe an assessment of some sort, or a new initiative, or a fundraising initiative, or anything of that kind of sort, and they're looking for someone that's plugged in and an influencer. And so that's kind of the work I do as an influencer is, spread the word on certain things in my platform and assist them in community engagement. It could be interviews, lives, gatherings, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Gotcha. And how did you get started in that?
You know, just, I didn't like choose it. It kind of chose me, type of thing. I make a lot of friends, you know, through various different works that I've done and volunteer work that I've done and community engagement outreach work that I've done. Just people follow me and I'm like, okay, why not leverage this? You know, it all started really in my pursuit, as you know, being an author and a writer, we have to have our own platform, right? We have to kind of have a little shingle out there, right? In the digital world, you have to have something at least, you know. And so in my pursuit of being published and working with, just submitting and so forth, I started building a little bit more and of that outward presentation and just learning. Excuse me. It's like a fire truck going by. So just learning different things.
The joys of not interviewing in a studio, right?
I know. It's wild. Yeah, it's just a fire truck, though. It's cool.
I can't wait till the studio opens back up. But anyways, that's all right.
Right. It's okay. It's all real. It's all very real. And that's the thing about what we do, you know, is that it's mainly about real engagement with community. And how I got started was just starting my own platform. And then from there, you know, folks just kept on inviting me to different events. And as an influencer, you get invited to many different places. You want to engage with national top speakers and be that bridge to bring them here locally so that everyone can share the awesome talk that you just witnessed, you know, because you get that bird's eye view or that back the stage taste of like what national platforms look like. And so just coming back to Madison, I lived on the East Coast for a while and was really engaged with a lot of different authors and, you know, book movements. It's just different. It's very different beast over there. And just learned some of those things and just brought them back home with me when I came back.
Sure. Sure. So how is it working with nonprofits? Because I imagine some of them have a little financial challenge. where their goal is to raise money, and they may be, their boards may be afraid to spend some money in order to raise that money. How do you get over a hurdle like that?
I find it to be about value. You know, it's showing what the value is. Oftentimes, nonprofits don't want to toot their horn about what is valuable in their work, or they don't even understand how to articulate that value, or they don't see it as valuable because they're in the mix for so long. Does that make sense? So
sure.
That, I think, has been my role in that communications and that strategy and building that strategic outreach plan for them, or their marketing plan or their engagement plan on what it's going to take to kind of get to that dollar amount that they need. And it's finding the value that we're going to have for sponsors and for donors. So even every dollar that you're giving, you need to show some sort of value, what you're helping to, what is that return on their investment and their time, and making mm-hmm. that fun. And the funner that we can make that, the better it is. I think that personalized touch is key. Equity is a good investment, and learning like how not to tokenize people of color in their outreach is like, that's where I come in. Like, that's the strategy that I bring. I work with so many agencies that their target audience, as far as like who they serve, are people of color, but oftentimes the people who are doing the work or the people who stand in their boards are not people of color. They're not representative of the community that they're serving. So how do we bridge that? How do we gain more people of color in their board? How do you establish, like, you know, more inclusivity and diversity in their work and in their employment and so forth? And that's what Wisconsin Mohead helps to market, helps to ingrain that mission and that new revised mission vision into every staff. And then they kind of go out and become their brand ambassadors, right? And so I don't have to, you know, my biggest joy is when I don't have to be there anymore. You know, I'm a pollinator. I definitely go to plant. I'm not really trying to stay for too long, right? But I
sure.
think where I differ for other companies is that I think I'm looking for a way to help, and help successfully is when they've been successfully pollinated and I'm done, right? Like they've taken in their new direction. They've generated now new ideas for their staff. Their staff is taking leads on the diversity outreach. They fully understand what it means not to tokenize the very population they want to outreach to. And when they've started to ask me for those resources, I'm like, great, I don't have to teach anymore. You know, I have to. And so then I go to the next one. As you know, nonprofits here in Dade County are quite plentiful. So,
of course, a ton of them. Yeah.
They're everywhere. They're everywhere, exactly. And movements and so forth, yeah.
That is not to say that nonprofits necessarily don't have money. There's just a lot of them don't, but there's arguably quite a few that do, that are doing just fine.
Oh, exactly. And to help the ones that don't, it's like, it's a combination. You know, I think of it as a table, right? And it's a combination of marketing, fundraising, brand advocacy, grant writing, all of that, state, petitioning and stuff like that. It's just, there's a lot of components that go into it. And my work is an important ingredient in all of this, but certainly, it's definitely for nonprofits that have kind of gone over a certain bend in their mission, right? When they've gotten to a certain kind of maturity, they kind of felt for people like me, which is sad because it kind of should happen at the beginning so that they're not doing more harm to the movement
sure.
or to the community that they're interacting with. So I think that's kind of like where I start with some of the engagement talks that I've been with UW Nonprofit Center for Engagement. I've done a couple of roundtables with them. The Medicine Community Foundation have hosted quite a few roundtables, and I've talked to them about getting people like me, other influencers of color, like other people of color, black influencers, in the room when they are planning a new nonprofit. And they don't have to be the board member, you know, they could be advisory boards, or they could just be somebody that's consulting them. But to pay for their time and their place even if it's just an honorarium and doesn't need to be like a huge payout, just really depends. You know, I think that those type of things can be negotiable. But
sure.
Oftentimes we just want to tap people for information without any kind of compensation, and that's starting
all right.
to feel.
All right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned working
I didn't
with
hear you.
You mentioned working with people of color and being able to essentially address the marketing geared towards them because you consider yourself a person who has more that same experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if that, like I'm a white dude, so I know how to market, generally speaking, to white dudes. But how can you help me distinguish? How would you market to a person of color? Or it seems to me like it's not quite that cut and dry. That there's age.
No.
You could argue race. You could argue financial, where they're at. Like there's a million different ways that you could split people and put them in categories. So can you tell me how you work with that?
You know, I think sometimes it's just better to know. It really depends. I think it really depends. It's really knowing your audience. You know, you can, like I said before, you know, getting some influencers in those communities to help you be that bridge, and
mm-hmm.
paying them for that is going to be a real start. And also developing a kit that where you educated yourself on the pitfalls. Like there's tons of places. I'm just going to name a couple that I've, over the years, have gone to. There's like bloggers called like Nonprofit AF, and you know what AF, right? You told me I couldn't swear in this on that
one. Sure.
But it's called, and it's there's like tons of like links and places to go and people to follow who are doing some work around nonprofit marketing, specifically in outreach marketing for people. And some of it's happening right here. You know, there's quite a few folks that are doing it here in Dane County as well. But nationwide, too, there's just, yeah. That's just one influencer that I can think of the top of my head that I go to regularly, you know, Nonprofit AF. I follow quite a few people on Medium. Medium
sure.
is in, you know, Digest app, right? And you can follow folks there. Twitter is really good, too. You can just even hashtag Nonprofit AF and you would get a lot of other folks that are writing this type of regarding what you just said, like how do I target, like how would I market, and then first of all, is it why, you know, why would you want to, right? So I think that's like 101. You gotta start with the why are you going to, because nobody wants to be patronized. Nobody wants just like, you know what I see the biggest default, I mean I'm just gonna, you know, speak off the hip here, but like what I see the biggest fault sometimes are nonprofit agencies that are working with youth, not even like directly, but they're like a foundation that gives money to nonprofits with youth, which is even
mm-hmm.
more separated and funny. And they'll use like a Black child like for their promotion, or an Asian American child, or a Latino child in their promotion.
Sure.
And so the person who's donating thinks that they're donating to an agency that works directly with children of color. And that's
sure.
not true. Not even
okay.
50%. And so that's the insidious, that's like where it gets really choppy, right? You got to figure out why are you doing this? How are those kids of color really benefiting? Then I was working with a group here in town, just like consulting them. And I was like, you know, basically give the kids the mic. And they were, you know, they give away bikes for kids or something. And
sure.
I was just like, give them the mics. What about the kids being part of that discussion? And marketing and their outreach, because kids are great. They're like natural marketers. They freaking know. You know,
sure.
they know what's up. And, you know, taking their voices and utilizing technology and video and, you know, properly tagging. You know, one thing I see a lot are, especially this last week with all the protests happening, I saw a lot of reporters just posting pictures of people of color in the protest, like really highlighting families of color. And I'm like, if you're not going to tag them, why? How is this helping the narrative? You know,
okay.
we've got to.
When you say tag them, what do you mean?
Like they don't tag the people who are there. You know, if it, I'm not talking like a crowd. I'm talking like they've purposely taken a couple pictures of leaders of color, like that were in the
sure.
protest, like one
okay.
or two. I'm talking profile headshots, right? No
okay.
three people in the show.
Sure.
Easily you could have gone ahead and grabbed their names Or even just said, hey, what agencies do you support? Hey, I want to post your picture in my on my thread or on my Twitter page, because that's what they were doing. They were doing clickbait. So they were utilizing these pictures and stuff, and then like
Sure.
people would click on it, right? And like them and whatever. So everything's popular, I swear. But,
Well, you're going down
right?
a very deep, deep hole there talking about media, right? Because their job is to essentially
It is.
sensationalize so they can sell the news. I mean, that's
Exactly.
they're just playing the
Exactly.
game, right?
Well, they are, but it's damaging communities of color when they're not properly tagging these communities of color with just is what would it take them to ask, hey guys, what agency can I tag you? How can I tag you? How can I find you? What would it take them? I'm not talking
Sure.
about a crowd. Obviously, when you're a reporter and saying you were in the Black Lives Matter protest and 50% of the people in your picture were black, but then your picture was like 100 people or 1,000, I'm not saying go ahead and tag every single one of them. No. I'm
Sure.
being very specific here. I'm
Okay.
taking portrait pictures head first, sometimes with even a little child in them, one or
Okay.
two people. And my whole thing is that's manageable enough to just say, hey, can I tag you? What's your name? Or what age? And if they don't have anything, or maybe that's too hard, just say, hey, what age are you guys should I tag to support? And, So trying to find out the agenda of like what's going on, existing about it is a way to. Is a way to center the story in whatever media you're doing.
All right, 15. So
And
if
that's a lot
so,
of work. It's a lot of exhaustive work, I think, too. I don't want to
my,
like say that this is easy work, which is why I'm very, my company is very selective. I'm a solo entrepreneur. I only take on, two or three clients every quarter. I am just, yeah, I rarely work with EDs. So I don't
Okay.
really work with even, I sometimes work with the marketing department if they have that, if they're that big or their outreach person, but mainly really working closely with EDs and board members.
Gotcha. It's interesting. It's interesting just the different perspectives, because me as a reporter, I'd be like, I got this thing is going to last only so long, so I have to get as much information as I possibly can that's relevant to the reader. Like by relevant, I mean the reader wants to know. It's going to give them the, I don't know, we all have attention spans of about a goldfish, right? 2 seconds or something like that. So,
That is true.
we just want that quick blurb, and I would think that the person trying to get the story is looking for the broader story, not the specifics. Because the broader story is going to sell more media, however the people buy that, right? Newspapers, I think those are still around or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it's interesting to say, I'm just trying to think. If you got hundreds of pictures and you took the time to get pictures of individuals, right? Because there's not really such a thing as running out of film now. So if you have all these pictures and you had to get or took the time to get the names, I understand that there's a reason that you would want to do that. But I could see how that's not going to be quite as easy as saying, hey, what's your name? And they're like, Joe Smith, whatever. And then move on with your life. They're going to be like, oh, what do you want this for? Who are you? Are you going to pay me for my image and likeness? Or you can't use
Yeah.
that. Like that's just going down a rabbit hole that I don't think that most anybody would want to go down, especially
No, I
when it's
get that.
something as emotionally driven as a protest or something like that, right? People are already fired up.
Right, but I think it's also the responsibility of the reporter to know what the demands on are and what agencies those that movement is supporting and organizing with and for. And those things can be easily gathered and tagged. So yes, I understand what you're saying. Except for when I'm talking about this, these are people that were like specific leaders that could have been easily recognizable and they knew who they were. But they didn't take the time to do it, and that lazy reporting on my behalf. So
Wait,
I'm being really
say that
specific
one
about
more
it.
time. Say,
I
like
said
these are
that
easily rep
it's because like say the reporter could they can and I and again this is me not coming from the outside as a critical leader and a critical reader, that it doesn't take much to also just say these folks were in this march, they're advocating for this agency, you can support them or learn more about them here, versus just arbitrarily just saying they were here at this march. Does that
Okay.
make sense? It's just another byline to like you know, really focus the people, the readers, like you're saying, getting the most out of you, most out of it, is also centering the very agencies and movements that that picture is tied to. And it only takes another byline. So I get what you're saying, too. It is very, you know, difficult to get that those tags, but it's not very difficult to find out what the movement, who the movement is supporting, and like it's generally.
Oh, I hope not. If the movement's intended to have any awareness, they better make it obvious what they're chanting about or whatever, right?
Oh,
otherwise,
of course.
A bunch of people making noise, right?
Exactly. I mean, this our recent movement here in Madison, Wisconsin, for you know the protests, were definitely organized by like three primary nonprofits, and they were, and so a lot of the pictures could have just kept on saying, you know, hey, go into, and some did, you know, I think folks finally got the message because later on in the week you kind of saw it that they were doing better on the tagging and so forth and highlighting these voices. I just think it took them a while for everyone to get on board. And I think that's the learning curve that I think for somebody like myself, it gets frustrating at times because this is not the first time we've had a major demonstration. This is not the first time that Black Lives have mattered. This isn't the first time we've encountered these this movement. And it won't be the last time. So it's better if we all kind of get on, like, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of better if we all get on the boat of, like, let's support them and, like, let's make this a practice.
Sure. In Madison, I guess I was visiting an office with a different business that I had. I was on the road a lot around the city locally, and I'd be at a downtown office, and there'd be people chanting about something at the Capitol. And I would say, what is going on? And the people that were at the office are just like, oh, there's always somebody holding up a sign somewhere around the Capitol all the time. Maybe the crowd size changes, but there's always somebody unhappy.
Well, and then they don't necessarily know if they're unhappy, right? I mean, they're standing up
for... Well, for them to take time on a Tuesday afternoon or whatever to walk around with a sign, clearly they feel like they've been victimized somehow. And
perhaps. I mean, I wouldn't make those assumptions either. I mean, I think that we need to... That they are definite... The demands are pretty clear, you know? I think the demands are clear, defunding the police, you know, Black Lives Matter...
for this protest specifically, this specific one, this is a race protest, right? But I guess what I'm saying is there are other protests in Madison that almost any given day of the week, there's somebody that's complaining about something. And
perhaps.
And the sign is rarely everything's okay, move along.
Right. Well... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I disagree a little bit about the complaint. I think complaint kind of has a connotation of, like, somebody, it's more like restoring and, like, amplifying the need. You know, you can see it either way. You can see it like a complaint, or you can see it like somebody needs to get watered. You know, somebody needs that attention or that growth or that support. Because that's what I feel like, yeah. And even just words, they're so powerful at how we describe protests, right?
Sure.
First it was like, you know, the thugs and all that, and people were like, ah, you know, that's just another connotation for Black people. And so it's just so like, complicated. So I hear what you're saying. It's really difficult to know what the root of the demonstration is. What are the demands? So I hear what you're saying. It is confusing because these are not the only types of demonstrations that we have. We have definitely demonstrations for environmental reasons. There's demonstrations for animal welfare.
Oh, endless. There's always somebody unhappy about something. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because the rule is that if we don't have any problems, we will find a way to make them. So even if it's on a subconscious level, right? At no point is your life problem-free, mostly, right?
Yeah.
We'll create them, right?
Yeah,
or
sometimes.
Because we humans just thrive on progress, and the way to progress, right, is to improve, And the way to improve is you find what's broken or bad and you fix it. So if we don't have any problems, we're not necessarily making any progress, and therefore we're complacent. And then it's like, what are we doing here? So, and that said, there's tons of problems, so we shouldn't have to create our own. There are a lot of problems, right? The whole race thing, environmental, the healthcare thing, right? It's interesting because that's still an issue, right? 2020. Tons of stuff. Tons of problems. So I guess in that question originally, I'm just trying to figure out how do you target or how do you get the message out without loss?
Without making people upset?
Or I mean,
what did you say?
Like there's so much information out there, right? Good or bad, false or true, whatever. There's just so much, right? There's advertisements, there's articles, there's blogs, there's podcasts, especially this super awesome one. The volume of videos being uploaded to YouTube at any given day is just surreal for me to fathom what their server rooms must look like.
Right.
Like there's no lack of information, for better or worse, right? So people just get inundated with all this stuff. And so you have to say, this is our message, this is clear, without, one, piss them off. And also without just saying like, oh my gosh, you again? Or them just blowing you off because they have their own problems, right? So you have to make a clear message. And I can see that that's going to be a challenge for any product or service, let alone one that's working with a nonprofit. Does that make sense? So I guess I'm just trying to get what I'm trying to find is the secret sauce, right?
And I don't think there is a secret sauce that you can find for it. There's not going to, isn't it as you were like, well, just even you say like, oh, the race thing, for a lot of people, they might even find that offensive. Just so it, you know, and I get,
well,
I mean,
people
I know
get offended at anything. I always,
Yeah, when I say the race thing, they couldn't even get offended for you saying that. No, and I hear what you're trying to say, and I get it, because I'm from Wisconsin, I get that. But at the same, we're all very uncomfortable in Wisconsin talking about anything like that, so we always sing it, and like, oh, it's that thing. And I get that. But at the same time, I think that it's hard. It's all hard to talk about. So to find one secret sauce for one people, I think is going to, that's why I was saying, like, encouraging advisory boards, getting in touch with a local influencer of that community that you want to target or that you want to, you know, outreach to, and finding out why. Why is it that you find a need now? If you've never outreached to communities of color, what are you going to really do for them now, right? It's like, get with that first, right? What are your intentions there? How would you really benefit them? And how are they going to see value in being part of their community? Have you gone to any of their events, first of all? Have you ever gone to Juneteenth, you know, if you were trying to target black communities? Have you gone to a black church? I mean, yourself as your marketer, if you're the marketer, if you're the ED, board member, et cetera, and do you have that representation already in your company and or in your organization? It's very important. So I think that's where you start first, you know, founding with the foundation. But as far as like a secret sauce to get to that bridge of the community, I mean, it's difficult. It's very difficult. It's very difficult, and it's not, I would look at, it's good examples, you know, I would look at some good examples. MG&E has certainly made a really good example of some of the work they've done. Obviously not without trial and error. You got to be prepared to be uncomfortable. I mean,
you got to clarify, how does MG&E have to advertise? They're the power company. Somebody say,
oh,
I'm turning the lights on now, or what? That's so
no, they have to advertise. I mean, they have to advertise and
do they really, though?
Community engagement. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Tell me, what would happen if they stopped? Would people not turn their lights on? People wouldn't charge their phone anymore?
They might go with Alliant Energy.
I don't think you get that choice. It's a utility. You're just connected to what you're connected to. You know what I mean? It's
no,
essentially
you can
monopoly.
Go to Alliant Energy if you didn't want to go there. I think it's part of their, it's also part of their mission to live greener, and part of their outreach to live greener for all communities of color.
Sure.
They took it upon themselves to have that mission. You're absolutely right. They don't need to. But the fact that they want to makes you love them even more.
I think they get to. They're they're making some money, so I think they're obligated to spend it.
I mean, I don't think they're – well, right. I mean, they're obligated to spend it, I suppose, if you want to see it that way. But I also kind of feel like they're utilizing their platform to educating communities of color, marginalized communities on green energy and green resources and how to recycle, how to take account that a lot of our communities of color have been recycling and reusing and renewing in so many levels, but oftentimes we're accused of not. And that is so not true. We are the most resourceful communities, you know, around. You know, we do a lot with this a dollar, and a lot of it is reused and renewed. And so I think they're just honoring those voices. I'm just putting that one company out there. But honestly, there's so many. I've worked with them. I've worked with them. AmFam has done, you know, with the Dream Bank, and their Dream Initiative has done some highlighting there. They've done some things with, like, Generator. I know they had during last week when everything was going down. Alex G. was in one of their conversations.
This is why I wanted to get you on the air, because I find this fascinating here. Because you are looking at some of these marketing things, whether you're involved with them or not, and you look at them through a race lens. I look at this, and I don't even see, like, the race thing doesn't stick out at me. I want to tell you a quick story here. I had an office, the last office I was in, I had all these pictures of people hung up, famous people, sometimes to me, right? And I used the magic marker and I just wrote on them like they had signed something to me. And these are people like Thomas Jefferson or Carlos Ghosn, though he's run into a bad day the past couple of years or something. This was a while ago. It was all these different people. And I had a client come in there, a business coaching client. And she's like, you don't have very many women hanging up, and you don't have very many people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And it never even dawned on me to, like, diversify.
Well, of course. I mean, that's
right. And I was like,
well, that's just because you have grown up here in a majority white society, and you're a white person yourself. So why, if we're not impactful in your life, I don't. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, that it's not nothing. I mean, I just said that that's very typical. It's not atypical.
Right. But it wasn't something like when I picked these pictures out, it was just like, who are my, I don't want to say the word heroes, because that's not, a lot of them probably dropped the ball in a few places. But people that I can say there were certain decisions that they made in their life that had a direct influence on my perception of the world, right? Ben Franklin. He had a ton of good stuff, right? His autobiography is amazing, so I put this picture up. Oddly enough, side tangent to that story, somebody's like, oh, you actually met all these people? And I was like, no, I didn't meet Ben Franklin. He's a little older than me. Anyways, it was interesting. It's just interesting looking at what people are hearing, what people pick out from that collection of images, what they're deciding to focus on. And something that, and I guess you get 100 people looking at that, and you'd probably get maybe 50 different perceptions, right? Oh my gosh, these are all older people. Oh my gosh, these are all generally white. They're generally male. That's not to say that I didn't have any women. I had Sarah Blakely, the Spanx woman, billionaire. I had Beyonce up there. But it was just, they were looking at the percentages, like, oh my gosh, your percentages are not accurate or aren't representative. I'm like, I live in Wisconsin, man. I think these percentages are pretty normal.
Well, and that's a sad thing, isn't it? Is that those percentages are pretty normal. And then what's really regular about Wisconsin is that we have the highest rate of incarceration of Black people in the country. I mean, you didn't put that up, you know, you didn't make us proud about that, right? It's one of the worst places to live if you're a person of color. You will always make, if you're a Black male to a white male, you will make, what, like 65 cents to the dollar? And if you're a Latina, you'll like make, I mean, for me, you probably make much more than I've ever made for any job ever. So,
right.
And I have a master's degree. You know, I ain't nobody to shake with. I have a master's degree in all of that. You know what I'm saying? But one thing that I would like to end with, you know, with like letting your listeners know is that there's ways for y'all to get educated too. I was just rewatching John Leguizamo's show on Netflix last night. Was it the Latin History for Morons? Also, you can watch 13 right now is trending right now on Netflix.
I'm not familiar with either of those. John Leguizamo, I am familiar with, but just
you
from
should.
Movies
you,
and stuff like that.
Oh, please watch it and then tell and then send me an email afterwards and tell me how you like it, because it is one of the most. It's called A Latin History for Morons. Yeah. Exactly.
I feel like there's an assumption there that I'm offended by.
Not me, but him. But it's a really funny take on American history and Latin history. And then 13 is a really nice series talking about just the 13th Amendment and like how it came about and so forth. So those would be great resources to start with. I know some of your listeners are more like, just more like into pop culture and stuff like that. So those are some easy digestible things to watch. And an oldie but goodie, which I love about white privilege, which is kind of what you mentioned or highlighted a little bit ago with pictures and everything, is an old one with Will Smith. It's called 6 Degrees of Separation. It came out in you and I are both Gen Xers. It came out like, I want to say in 95, maybe?
Okay.
In 95 it came out with Will Smith, was just starting, right? And it's an awesome movie about white privilege. It's a little bit about Catcher in the Rye, and it's called Six Degrees of Separation. And it's a really good, fun show about white privilege. But yeah, certainly everything, you know, that's been going on. I mean, a white guy can murder someone and still keep a job. You know, all those injustices
happen. Oh, I don't know if that's true.
Oh, it
not
is.
Not universally, anyways.
Oh, it is. It is so true. They've been doing it and ever. It is very true. And maybe that's what you need to think about, is when you say it's not true, it's like, I know it's true as a person of color. I know that a white person can kill somebody and keep their job.
The past? Or I guess you got to clarify that, because I can guarantee.
Well, if they're a police officer, yes.
Oh, my
like,
gosh.
If they're a police officer, yes. They've been.
So this, I want you to pause right there. Because it's these broad generalizations that are happening on both sides that this is why people have disagreements.
Oh, of course. Of course. That's perhaps
so
my broad generalization.
Can get away with murder,
but it's still some of it's true. So it doesn't make it truly untrue.
I would challenge that.
But that's
universally,
okay?
I'm certain that if I went in the middle of the street and somebody, I don't care who it is.
Oh, I'm not talking about you.
And would go to jail. I'm a white dude. You said all white dudes.
I'm not talking about you. I said white people in general. As a police officer.
How is that not racist?
Oh, I said as a police officer.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you talked, if you understood that I would. I don't know if you understood that part that I said as a police officer. Maybe not in the. Let's just say now they probably won't, or less.
Oh my gosh!
But I don't know.
I don't. I feel like there's a lot of hate and there's a lot of tension, and I feel like.
For me, no. But you see, what about Fidel Castillo's situation in Minneapolis? They were exonerated.
I'm sorry. The what?
Castillo. Fidelfo Castillo, he was shot.
The Cuban guy?
He was shot. Yeah, he was shot right in his car with his girlfriend and his daughter in the back seat. What was it, 2 years ago now? And there's real reasons why these protests have been happening for the last.
I completely understand.
Days.
Yes, totally understand that. Completely understand that. But when you make a broad statement like a white guy can kill someone and not lose his job.
Oh, well. I mean, okay, Trump even said he could do that. You know that, right? Trump said it, like, within the last, like, 2 years, he said that he could kill anybody. Okay. I mean, who is that anybody? And then he said that, you know, looters, if people are going to loot, you better shoot them. You know, it's just, it's all these, like, weird permissions, you know. And I get what you're saying. You maybe I'm being broad and generalizing. I get it.
No, see, my rule is if you make it about race, it's going to be about race. If you make it about age, it's going to be about age, right? So pick your ism. As long as you fight that, you're going to create that. So
right.
There's no, as long
well,
as you
for you, that might be right.
Hold on. As long as you continually point out race, you're going to make race a distinguishment, right? So if ever you said, let's just take the Black Chamber of Commerce, right? If we said, I'm going to start a white Chamber of Commerce, I would have a bad day, right?
Anyone.
Not specifically.
Okay. So I mean, unknowingly. There's a lot to unpack, I think, and then to really discuss, and I'm sorry if I made such a generalization like that, but I meant police mainly, like white police officers have gotten away with murdering people and have gotten mainly, I won't say that they do it completely and all the time. No, I'm saying that the times that they have done it, they've gotten away with it. And that's
all
right.
The time, or are these exceptions to the rule?
I said that what I said, that was it. What I really mean is that white police officers, when they have murdered Black people, they have gotten away with it.
Every single time.
I'm not saying all the times they have. No, obviously, right now, I mean, they got fired finally. But
sure.
How many times did it take us to get there? This year already, there are 12 of them have been, 12 Black people have been murdered at the hands of police this year. And that really never happened. That really should never happen.
I totally agree. How many?
None of us.
Other,
I mean,
there, like,
I'm not just talking
race.
Black people.
Right.
I mean, and we're also saying that, you know, there's like 2,000 Latino children in cages right now. And those are realities that I can't and my agency don't ignore. And help other agencies amplify, other grassroots agencies and nonprofits help amplify their message and support in dismantling that institutionalized racism and liberating, you know, children that are in cages, liberating some folks that are, you know, in these situations. That they can cross. It has so many different types of missions. And for I do find that's in, well, they have different types of mission projects, right? And each one has its unique mission. So I can't really speak to all of them, but which to say that most of them work in racial justice and social justice. And so they deal with intersectionality. So for me, to say, it's only about race, I can't speak of it just about race. It has to be all the things in the table of intersection. It could be disability and race, it can be racial justice and, you know, women's justice, and it could be, you know, victims and racial justice. It could be all these different things. It might not be about racial justice. It might be just about women's issues and aging, let's say. So the intersectionality part is something that we as a company, like, definitely Wisconsin Warhead, like, promotes, and we are definitely keen to negotiating in that intersectionality and how best to make your message clear, because sometimes when you're dealing with intersectionality, it seems as if you have many different missions and you very well might have many different ways of showing up in those different communities and circles, but that still doesn't negate the fundamental work that you're doing. And so we have and constructing messages like that and outreach campaigns that help address those things.
Do you have an example?
So I have been part of the YWCA Racial Justice Conference for, I want to say, 5 years. And we have done many different initiatives with them. We've done the most latest iteration, our intensive workshop, where the second day, the half of the second day, it's me and mainly other facilitators. We facilitate like a deep dive into the work, be it regarding, just different themes, you know, policing youth. It could be social media and youth. So different types of workshops where leaders and police officers, and I've had police officers, and so don't think that I don't have relationships with police officers. We've had many police officers that join in our conversations, and they give, you know, their points of view too, and we hold circles for them and talking circles and come up with ways, active ways that people can engage in the work that other folks are doing in the building those bridges. And other ways we've done, I've done like a welcoming area for them where we do reflection meditation in the front of the conference. So folks that feel triggered, or maybe like you were saying, like get emotionally engaged, and they're like, we're going to stick to one thing. So there's people like you who might say that it might be too much to like take on multiple voices and the multiplicity and the complexity of racism. And so we have
areas where you can sit and meditate and think. And so those are some initiatives that Wisconsin Moorhead was able to accomplish in a way. And also honoring activists that have passed locally and holding that space for them. So we've done those type of things creatively. So those are some of the things I've been part of. Like genes, there's a gene outreach that we do with Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We've done work with and abuse as well. There's so many. Right now we're doing an initiative of the Latinx medicine talk back regarding anti-blackness in the Latino community. So we're all Wisconsin. Yes. So it's a panel discussion on Facebook Live, because I can't wait for it anymore. We're tired of waiting for it. There's a large generation of Latinos growing up in Dane County that mainly speak English, and they need to be checked on their own bias and discrimination practices or beliefs. And how do we energize that conversation is by showing them other millennial Latinos like themselves and Gen Xers like me, perhaps, leading that conversation. So we're engaged in various different forms and ways in the community doing this work.
Mm-hmm. This has been Authentic Business Program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you remotely through the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and reception services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Araceli Esparza, founder and owner of Midwest Mujer, an outreach marketing company. Araceli, thank you so much for being on the show. Can you tell me your website again?
www.wisconsinmujer.com.
Mujer. All right. Awesome. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunframemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.